Happy New Year and welcome to the first Annals of Internal Medicine podcast of 2026. I'm Dr. Christine Lane, Annals Editor-in-Chief, and I'm here to let you know about the recently published articles you'll find on annals.org. Adherence to HIV therapy can be a challenge for some patients. Therapy with a regimen that is administered once weekly could address the adherence challenges of daily HIV treatment. The first article I'll highlight reports a clinical trial that randomized 104 adults with HIV who are on a regimen of bictegravir, emtricitabine, tenofovir for at least 24 weeks and well-controlled with RNA levels of less than 50 copies per ml to either continue the daily regimen or switch to once-weekly oral islatravir plus lenacapavir. At week 24, one participant in the once-weekly therapy group and none in the daily therapy group had HIV-1 RNA levels of 50 copies per ml or more. At week 48, 94.2% of the once-weekly therapy and 92.3% of the daily therapy group remained well-controlled. No serious adverse events were related to treatment in either group. The findings of this Phase 2 trial suggest that this once-weekly regimen maintained high rates of virologic suppression through week 48 without any treatment-related serious adverse events. Although many people use cannabinoids for chronic pain, their effectiveness and safety in the management of chronic pain are uncertain. Next is a report of a systematic review updated through July 28, 2025, that identified and summarized the findings of randomized placebo-controlled trials of cannabinoids for chronic pain. The authors found 25 randomized controlled trials, including a total of 2,303 patients, of whom 64% had neuropathic pain. The available evidence was limited by short follow-up, variability within categories, lack of product details, and unclear U.S. availability of the studied products, but suggests that cannabinoid products with comparable or high THC to CBD ratio may result in small improvements in pain, but increased adverse events during short-term treatment of primarily neuropathic pain. Among high-ratio THC to CBD or THC-only products, nabilolone reduced pain. Low THC to CBD products do not appear to improve outcomes. Additional research with clearly identified cannabinoid products, diverse pain types, and longer follow-up aren't needed. Like bariatric surgery, GLP-1 receptor agonist treatment can lead to substantial loss of lean body mass, which may compromise muscle function and performance. However, physical functioning outcomes associated with loss of lean body mass in persons treated with GLP-1 receptor agonists remains largely unexamined. A new ideas and opinions commentary calls for regular body composition and physical functioning assessment during GLP-1 receptor agonist treatment. The authors speculate that integrating these assessments with concurrent exercise interventions may enhance the long-term efficacy of pharmacological treatment. The comparative risk of diabetic foot disease with SGLT2 inhibitors versus glucagon-like peptide 1 receptor agonists is unknown. The next article uses target trial emulation and Danish healthcare registry and research data to study incident foot disease in patients with type 2 diabetes initiating either SGLT2 inhibitors or GLP-1 receptor agonists. During six-year follow-up, foot disease occurred in 10.8% of SGLT2 users and 12% of GLP-1 receptor agonist users, corresponding to a relative risk of 0.9. 95% confidence intervals 0.84 to 0.97 in an intention to treat analysis. Differences did not emerge until after year 3, when 40% of SGLT2 inhibitors and 32% of GLP-1 receptor agonist users had discontinued initial treatment. The modest reduction in risk among SGLT2 inhibitor users was driven by lower risks of neuropathy. SGLT2 inhibitors and GLP-1 receptor agonist users had similar risks of peripheral artery disease, foot ulcers, amputations, and all-cause mortality. And staying on the topic of type 2 diabetes, whether statins benefit patients with type 2 diabetes with low predicted 10-year cardiovascular risk is uncertain. The authors of the next article also use target trial emulation, and they evaluate the effectiveness and safety of statin initiation for primary prevention among adults with type 2 diabetes stratified by predicted 10-year risk of cardiovascular disease. Using a United Kingdom research database, they studied adults aged 25 to 84 years with a diagnosis of type 2 diabetes between 2005 and 2016. And without a history of coronary artery disease, myocardial infarction, stroke, heart failure, myopathy, liver disease, rheumatic heart disease, schizophrenia, or cancer. Statin initiators were propensity score matched to non-initiators at a 1-to-4 ratio within 4 strata of 10-year predicted cardiovascular risk. Low, less than 10%, intermediate, 10 to 19%, high, 20 to 29%, and very high, greater than or equal to 30%. The results showed that statin initiation for primary prevention was associated with reductions in all-cause mortality and major cardiovascular disease across the full spectrum of predicted cardiovascular risk in adults with type 2 diabetes. Next is a synopsis of the 2025 U.S. Veterans Administration recommendations for the management of chronic kidney disease with a focus on aspects of care most relevant to the primary care setting. Go to the article on annals.org for a practical summary of these important recommendations that are relevant well beyond the Veterans Administration setting. The advent of monoclonal anti-amyloid antibody therapy for Alzheimer's disease has thrust diagnostic criteria into the spotlight with critical implications for patient care. Using 2 clinical scenarios, the authors of an Ideas and Opinions commentary highlight the diagnostic challenges and implications for patients with Alzheimer's disease and propose principles to help navigate the diagnostic uncertainty. Recent challenges to gender-affirming care are following a familiar playbook, according to the author of a new History of Medicine article that emphasizes how historical policy continues to shape modern efforts to govern this area of medicine. Next is a commentary that discusses how policy rollbacks under the U.S.'s One Big Beautiful Bill Act threaten to worsen some of the very problems that recent healthcare reforms had started to address. And another commentary argues that accounting for open-mindedness as part of the conflict of interest management process can complement the management of financial conflicts of interest and reduce the need to collect and assess non-financial conflicts of interest when developing clinical guidelines. And the last article I'll mention is an Ideas and Opinions essay by Michael Bretthauer, our associate editor for gastroenterology, and the principal investigator of the Nordic study, a large randomized trial of screening colonoscopy that showed that colonoscopy screening reduced colorectal cancer incidence by about only 30%, not the 90% anticipated, and had uncertain effect on overall mortality. The article got a lot of attention worldwide. Dr. Bretthauer describes the vitriol directed at him and his research team by screening proponents who thought there must be something wrong with the study and with the researchers who did the study. The commentary reiterates that the goal was not to prove that colonoscopy reduces colorectal cancer risk, but to investigate whether it does. In other words, the researchers were devoted to the best possible conduct in reporting of the trial and consciously not devoted to any particular outcome of the trial. Good research does not aim to confirm consensus or beliefs. It questions them and sometimes disrupts them. The commentary calls for us to embrace scientific discourse to advance medicine and improve patient care, an important message for current times when good science is frequently under assault by those who don't like its findings. Before the podcast ends, I want to call your attention to a new feature in Annals, IM Matters News. This new feature brings some of the award-winning health journalism traditionally included in ACP's member newspaper, IM Matters from ACP, to the broad readership of Annals of Internal Medicine. IM Matters News will include coverage of timely topics relevant to clinicians, educators, researchers, and policymakers authored by health journalists. In addition to news stories, IM Matters News will feature interviews with authors of recent Annals articles, providing insight into the researchers' motivations, challenges, and surprises encountered during their studies, and how they hope their work might change practice or policy. This inaugural issue of IM Matters News includes a news story about the recent evidence and current events surrounding a potential link between acetaminophen use in pregnancy and neurodevelopmental disorders, as well as a Q&A with the author of the recent Annals article, Effect of Non-Medical Cannabis Legalization and Exposure to Retail Stores on Cannabis-Related Harms. We welcome your suggestions for topics you would like to see in this new feature. Please send your ideas to imatters@acponline.org. IM Matters News aims to be a vehicle for communicating the implications for health and healthcare of the interesting, challenging, and constantly evolving times we live in. And now we are at the end of this podcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Beth Jenkinson, Andrew Langman, and Bernie Turner for their technical support.